All right, hey, one of our favorites, Trey Wallace, senior reporter for OutKick, covering college sports. Trey, how are you, man?
I'm good, dude. I'm good. I'm getting, I can't believe we're at the halfway point of the football season. Like, it honestly feels like it's been going on for like 7 months. But yeah, like we made it, like we're halfway here. And I think this is going to be like separation Saturday in the SEC. Like, you know, and obviously the SEC is all over the place. Like, who knows what happens. But what I'm getting at is, like, we're going to find out with Ole Miss and Georgia. You know, like, Georgia could take that second L. I think the Tennessee-Bama game, I think, is massive, because who's going to take the second loss? And then, you know, whoever wins that game obviously is going to, you know, be in CFP contention even more. And then, you know, we got our boys on West End, you know what I mean? Just good Vanderbilt, just a 2.5-point favorite against LSU. And I think they were right on the money. So I'm going to be fascinated by this weekend. And I think that I honestly think, too, if like Drinkwitz and Missouri go into Auburn and like beat them up. Like 14 points, something like that, because that feels like the best way I put it, I know this is not what we're talking about, but the best way to put the Auburn situation is, it maybe feels like what happened to Penn State after losing to Oregon. Like, it broke them. You know what I mean? Like, so we're about to find out. There's some coaches that their agents are working overtime right now, Jimmy Sexton and Trace Armstrong.
Well, hey, let me ask you this. This is my favorite stat. I've been saying it all week. My audience is probably sick of hearing it, but I'm just kind of curious because it still blows my mind. Any idea when, what year it was, the last time Vanderbilt was favored over LSU?
Oh, man. Let's see. It's been I'm gonna be really, really stupid here and say 2001, unfortunately. I was trying to think of the Franklin years, and they played LSU during that time.
1948.
Holy hell, Brad. Like, come on, man.
In fairness, it's not like they play a ton. So
I just want to know what the odds makers were doing in 1948 and how that worked in some back alley room while they're also running moonshine at the same time. Like, I'm fascinated by that.
And then perhaps an even more just mind-blowing statistic. So Vanderbilt is favored, as you referenced. Prior to this, how many consecutive games has Vanderbilt been an underdog in just Southeastern Conference games? How many games in a row has Vanderbilt been an underdog in Southeastern Conference games until now?
So you just asked me for how many games, not what year, right?
Right, how many games in a row they've been an underdog in conference play?
And this is a consecutive years?
Several years, yeah.
I'm going to say 28.
51.
Holy hell.
Wow. And now they're a favorite over a top 10 team.
This ain't
3-8 Kentucky coming to town. This is top 10 LSU. They're favored to beat them. First time in 52 conference games. Shout out Clark Lee.
Yeah, I mean, they went to Bama as underdogs. And then, yeah, you turn around 2 weeks later and you're favored against LSU. And, like, by the way, like, side note, like, when, and you know this, like, when teams, like, top 10 teams like LSU, top 10, like, that's a weird number to put besides LSU right now without an offense. But the fact that they are, usually they would get the benefit of the doubt and be like a 2.5-point favorite on the road. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that goes to tell you what Vegas and whoever's making these lines think about Vanderbilt this year. And also at the same time, what they think about LSU and how they think they're going to catch another L this weekend. Like, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's like bait. Like, to me, I don't think that's like you're out in the boat and you're throwing the blood into the water type of thing. See who gets it. And then all of a sudden the line shifted. Like, I honestly think that they think Vanderbilt's 2.5 points better than LSU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they may very well be. So that's going to be a huge game. But I really wanted to have you on for one specific reason. I don't know if you remember this, Trey. I believe you were writing for a website. I think it was called the Read Optional.
Read Optional, yeah.
And that was the first time I'd heard of you. And you were writing about a credit card scandal down in Gainesville.
That was fun.
Florida media people were like, who the hell's this guy? He's full of it. Well, wouldn't you know, scandal ensued. Trey got it right. And it's just, it's funny because how it comes full circle.
Right.
We're back again. Billy Napier. Gainesville's on fire. What are we doing here? And hell, they got a very dangerous Mississippi State coming into town too. Well, I mean, that's kind of lost in the shuffle, but that adds to the intrigue to me.
It's funny. It's so funny to like reminisce on those days. I loved working at the Read Optional. Because, you know, national site, and we were, you know, it was out there. The credit card scandal happened. I've told you this. I don't think I've ever said this like on there, but I was making like secret trips to Gainesville. Like, you know, the folks down there had no idea that I was literally in town. Like, they might have been at like the football press conference, but I was at the police department talking to the detectives and whatnot. And then I was going to apartment complexes and like talking to managers. So like I'm in and around Gainesville, and I went down there like four times over like a 6 week period, and following up on that and doing that story and working on it. And then the McElwain, you know, like that happens. And then I start going back down there again, cause the McElwain stuff and we broke the McElwain getting fired nonsense. And then at the same time, like that was just a crazy run, like, you know, this in this business, like you get on a run for some reason, I don't know, whatever, I believe in fate and whatnot. Kevin Sumlin, you know, we got that, he was fired. Like that was just a wild year. Like that was, and thinking back on it, yeah, I mean, the credit card scandal happened, and then, you know, the McElwain, and then the shark photo, God bless him, it's not him, by the way. Like in today's world with AI, like that might have been different. But yeah, it's such crazy times. And the fact that we're here again, I think that it goes to show you the problems in Gainesville. They just can't seem to get it right. And I think, you know, even with a 9 or 10 win season, you know, like with Mullen, you know, and what Mullen was doing, but then you kind of add on to it and it's like, man, they just, you know, they've been trying to etch it and getting back to that national standard. And I think you would agree with me here too. Like, and we talked about this at SEC Media Days as well. Like Florida felt like a CFP team. Like they looked like it. You know what I mean? Like, we, by the way, all of us did not know what was going on. We knew DJ Lagway was struggling with his arm, but we didn't realize that, you know, he would have to go 5 weeks into the season, not 5 weeks into the season, but like fall camp included, before really getting live reps per se in practice. So it's just been a train wreck, I think, since last season. And I think it all goes back to when Scott Strickland decided not to get rid of Billy Napier at that point last season. And now you look back on it like, well, damn, you could have saved us some heartbreak. We might have all LK, you know, down here in Gainesville. Kiffin might be the head coach. We might not be worrying about this right now. It's crazy how it all comes together.
Right. So here's something, you know, you're starting to see more fan bases get it tuned into this. And I think it happened when James Franklin got fired at Penn State. But you know, this looks to be a very, very competitive coaching cycle, to where, you know, Florida last season could have had their pick of the litter, perhaps. But, you know, what's your thoughts on that? Hell, the job's not even open yet, but you know, everyone knows that it's going to be. Does that factor in, even if it's not Florida, for maybe like an Auburn or something like that, or a Kentucky, if they're considering dismissing their coach? The fact that there's so many jobs that look to be open, that this would be a tough cycle to hire, perhaps.
The interesting part about all of that is like Kentucky sitting around waiting to see if Mark Stoops can get another job somewhere else, you know, because they know, and that's no shot at Mark Stoops. Like if Mark Stoops could get out of Kentucky, I think, and go reset his coaching career, like Va Tech, and I'm just throwing out of school, like right. Va Tech or some Oklahoma State, something like that, like, that would probably, like, he'd be great if it weren't for one small thing. And that one small thing is right when Kentucky says, hey, we'd like to move in a different direction, they got to pay him $38 million within a month and a half. So you're not walking away from that money. So I kind of, in a way, people are going to be pissed when I say this, but I really don't care. I kind of feel bad for Mark Stoops in a sense, because he's like stuck in purgatory. Like, well, damn, I can't leave and go get this other job because I'd be risking a $38 million check and that I would never have to work again in my life. Like, that's the interesting part about this. And again, nobody's going to care because these coaches are making so much money, but I think you know where I'm going with that. And the coaching carousel, buddy, we're just getting started. I've spoken with multiple ADs, boosters, NIL donors. Like, there is a difference now between boosters and NIL donors, which is crazy enough, over the last month or so. And this will probably be, and I'm not going to compare it to Nick Saban, because Nick Saban was different. Nick Saban retired at an interesting time, and then it created a ripple effect. You know, Jed goes to Washington, Arizona's having to figure it out, you know, obviously Kalen to Alabama. There were also other rumors out there. So, but this coaching carousel is just so different. And especially the era that we're in the college athletics. So I think I would just tell folks to strap in, because this is going to get crazy. You're going to see coaches, in my opinion, leave good jobs to go either reset somewhere else for another good job, or at the same time, they're like, man, I can't handle this at this place. Like, find me an out, get me somewhere else that maybe is more, you know, bought in with the NIL standpoint or the transfer portal, or they have a better organization within the athletic department. So I think we're going to see, I think there's going to be some big names. In talking with folks out there, I think that we're in for something very, very interesting. And I think the curious part that I have right now is the Auburn situation, first off, because people in Auburn, the money folks, and around the state of Alabama, which I grew up in, and I know a lot of people, they are pissed about where this program is at right now. And now, so that's where I'm fascinated at, because I think that there's going to be a couple different openings in the SEC this year.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you hit on that, because it's similar, I think, to Florida, but at Auburn, where, you know, I think it used to be just, you know, how are the fans? What's the temperature of the fans? Are the fans going to start booing? Blah, blah, blah. But now I think it's maybe perhaps more important, the people that are paying the players, you know, that they're, if you lose those people, you're absolutely screwed in today's landscape.
Well, it's because, I mean, yeah, you hit it, brother, because, like, it's cool. Awesome. The school can find $20.5 million to spread around athletics. Okay, guess what? You're going to need about 20 mil extra on the side, and that comes from those NIL donors. You know, in the past, you could go to a couple of boosters and you could scrounge up some money, you know, and when I say scrounge up, I mean just passing around the offering plate and figure out how to get out of a coaching buyout. At the same time, like the NIL part, when it was first started, it's like, okay, look, we need a couple hundred grand here to take care of this. Well, that number's only going like this since then. It ain't a couple hundred grand to take care of it. No, we need a couple million. And so it's a big difference. And the problem is, too, for these NIL donors, as I call them, is that the ROI, the only return on investment you're getting is self-fulfillment. Seeing your team playing in the college football playoff or either holding up the trophy at the end of the year. Like, if I'm donating $3 million out of my pocket, which I don't have, but if I did, it would go to my South Alabama Jaguars. And what I would say is that, okay, I want to see them holding up a Sun Belt Conference trophy at the end of the year, and I want to see them in the CFP. Like, that's it. And if it's not, I'm going to feel like absolute hell, because it's like, well, damn, I just wasted $3 million of my own money. And we went 1-5 or 1-8. Like, that wasn't worth it. So I just, that's where we're at right now. And I think from a financial standpoint, you've got a lot of people, and you know this, Brad, you talk to so many people as well. Like the Auburn spot, they went all in with Hugh over the last year and a half. Me and you talked about this last season, where they were like, okay, we're going to give Hugh what he needs for NIL for this year, but we expect results. And if we don't get those results, we're going to be vouching to move in a different direction, because we're not getting a return on investment. The team looks complacent at times. They don't look well coached at times. And as you could tell by that game against Georgia, which I understand, it's like when they don't get that touchdown before the first half, it's like the life was sucked out of that stadium. And what you forget, I think, not other people, is, okay, well, you had 30 minutes to go beat Georgia. Like, you were still leading. Like, just rally. Plays happen in college football. So, what, and Hugh Freeze looked like he was, attending a memorial service or something like that at halftime. Like, God bless him. But it just feels like, Brady, down at Auburn, it's never going to get fixed under Hugh Freeze. And I think people bought into the Hugh Freeze thing. They're like, here we go. This is the Hugh. But if you really look at the numbers, Auburn probably, looking back on it, thinks they made a mistake.
Oh, no doubt. And I think the best example was last week, Trey, where you – now, should everyone be compared to Kirby Smart? No. But you got one coach and one program that can get in a giant hole, and they're going to fight and they're going to claw, and you have to kill them to end them. They will not give up in a football game. Whereas on the Plains, you got a head coach and a team that, as soon as something goes wrong, everything starts to cave and we start pointing fingers and we fire this coordinator, we fire that coordinator. It was this quarterback's fault. Now it's the referee's fault. You know, there's always an excuse with Hugh Freeze. And, he's out of excuses. And I think that's why his ass is gone.
I'm tired of it. Like, I'm tired of listening to Hugh Freeze just talk about what if, and we could have done this, and, what if a player or two goes this direction, and blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, fine. The SEC's officiating has been not good. I was about to say something else, but not good this year. And there's been some questionable things that happened. But that play at the goal line, that was a bang bang play. I would be fine with that. However, it was ruled on the field. It was ruled a fumble. Okay, cool. That was a fumble. It was a punch out at the same time he was trying to catch the goal line. Whatever. And then you had the whole, Kirby was clapping, and that was fun. God bless Kirby. I love Kirby. I know what he was doing. Like, I get it. He was saying Auburn was doing this to try to get the snap off, but it was actually, if you go back and look at the tape, it was one defender 20 yards away from the line of scrimmage. Like, I don't think the quarterback could hear that going on. So, like, it's just funny, and it's a pile-on thing, and I get it, but Auburn didn't lose that game because of the official. Auburn lost that game because they let the referees get in their head and they just had no life. So this Hugh Freeze thing, I talked to a board of trustee member before the season started, and they told me, look, he's got to get to 8 wins to keep his job, period. Got to get to 8 wins to keep his job. And I think that still holds true now. And you look at it, like, the thing I'll say about Auburn, and I kind of said it earlier, with Missouri coming to town after a loss to Alabama, wanting to go out and prove, because I thought Missouri played a really good game against Alabama. A couple things happened that, they get the taunting penalty back. Who knows what happens or whatever. I think that's a pissed off team going down to Auburn. And I think that's a broken team in Auburn. I think I relate it back to like the Oregon Penn State game where everything kind of went downhill. So, but who knows? We're in the SEC. Anything can happen, and Auburn could somehow win that game, and all of a sudden fans are on a high, and then they'll lose two straight, and they're like, oh, okay, we'll fire him. You know what I mean? Like, no, the experiment's done. Get over it. Move on, and go find yourself a coach that can win, and stop hiring coaches based off, A, what they've done in the past. And when I say past, I'm talking about past. Because, like, you can be happy with Hugh Freeze and what he did at Liberty for the 1 year. But if you go back and look at his final 2 years at Ole Miss, it's pretty average. So I'm just – the shtick is up is what I'm getting.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's swing it back to Gainesville, where you did some outstanding reporting for OutKick, where we have staffers and things of that nature out looking for – employment elsewhere. That kind of tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it really does. And I think there is so much confusion is a word that was used to be over the last, number of weeks, but especially over the last few days. You've got lower level staffers. I want to make this very, very clear. These assistant coaches on the on Napier staff, which, by the way, he's got enough staff members that could fill the White House. And I think at the same time, I think at the same time, you've got so many folks that don't have these little fat agreements that when they get fired, okay, well, they're going to get a couple hundred G's to go away. You know what I mean? Like they're going to be fine. Like, and I mean that in the sense of like for the short term, a couple hundred G's is not going to last you a lifetime, but they have a cushion. Well, the lower level staffers don't. The recruiting staffers, GAs, interns, the folks that work in the recruiting department, the digital content side, like all of that stuff thrown in, those folks don't have cushions. Like you get a new coach that comes in, and then look what Billy did when he took the Florida job. Look how many people he hired and how many people were let go. Like carryover from the previous staff just rarely happens. You know what I mean? Unless it's a job that, you know, it would fit that part. Okay, the digital content, social media strategy has been great. All right, we're going to keep that. Like, that's fine. The recruiting staffers, the GAs, I could go on and on. Defensive assistants, the assistant to the regional manager, like those type of people are going to be out of a job. And so you've got them, you know, I've only been able to confirm a number of them, but you know, a number of them are looking around and floating out resumes, making calls on the side when they're not working, obviously, and they probably are doing it when they're working, and trying to figure out what the job market's going to be, and seeing if other schools are going to be interested in their work. And that's not a bad thing, by the way. Like you see that with a lot of jobs, completely understandable. But the situation right now in Florida is these folks don't think they're going to have a job in 2 months once the season's over. And so now they're trying to figure out, okay, I have to have a steady income. You know what I mean? I know what I signed up for, but I got to have a steady income. I got to find something. And so, yeah, you've got staffers that are looking around, and I can't say I blame them because there's been so much noise. Like they were looking around last year, you know, and that's the thing people forget. That's the thing that, in my opinion, is a little bit lost with this situation in Gainesville, is that these folks were dealing with this a year ago, you know, 2 weeks ago, a year ago. Like they were, Billy Napier was going to be fired. And then all of a sudden, you know, he goes on this little run, he plays DJ, and he gives a little hope to the fans and Scott Strickland, and he doesn't have to make a move. So Billy keeps his job. And so they already went through it once. Now they're having to go through it again. And they know the second time around, they're not keeping their jobs in Gainesville. So they're having to look around. So that just goes to show you, I think, the dysfunction. And I would say this too. Like, if Billy knows he's going to be let go, or like, let's just say the boss of one of these staffers, you know, they're not going to have a problem with them looking for another job. Like, because you have to set up your future. Do I think Billy is sat down in a room and said, hey guys, look, we got to block out the outside noise. Like I get it. Like we all might be out of a job here. Like, and what's Billy going to say? Like, but guess what? I'm going to have 20 some odd million dollars. I'm good. But you guys fend for yourselves. Like that's the interest. I'm not saying he's saying that, but I'm saying, you know, in a hypothetical world, that's where things have gotten right now in Gainesville, and it's bad. And, you know, I know we'll talk more about it, but I think even with last night, or I'm sorry, on Wednesday night, when Matt Hayes put out his thing from USA Today, and hat tip to Matt, does a fantastic job. You know, then you had the UAA folks like talking, but it seemed like it was just one UAA person talking to like six different reporters, telling them that no, it was just one booster. And, you know, everything's hunky-dory and fine. Like, they were actually talking about the programs and, you know, good shape and where we're going in the future. Stop, man. That is damage control from Scott Strickland and trying to put out this narrative that, no, we didn't have a discussion where the head football boosters told us that they were not going to fund our NIL in the future or help with Billy's buyout in the future when you're going to need it. If he's going to go. So they try a damage control. And I just want folks out there to realize, you know, in our business, Mike, what we do, you see this all the time. Like we'll get text messages from folks being like, hey, You want to help out with this? Well, no, that goes against my damn reporting. Why would I help out with that? So, like, I just think it's a dumpster fire, and I think it's time to move on for Billy. I like Billy. I think you would agree. Billy's a really stand-up guy, nice guy. I followed him for a lot of what he did at Louisiana Lafayette, which, by the way, it's called Louisiana Lafayette, not Louisiana. Please get it right. And I just think it's time, man. They can't keep putting this off.
I got a really great question the other day, and I'm going to pose it to you because, you know, 99% of these fans and media and all that, they want to know who's the next Arkansas coach, who's the next Florida coach. And we could just throw shit against the wall and hopefully we're right. But I think a more interesting question, Trey, is the one that got posed to us yesterday. Just bear with me here. So Arkansas is already open. Florida, let's say, will be open. And let's just for the sake of this, let's say Auburn and Kentucky become open. Which one of those administrations or boosters, whatever you want to call it, who do you have the most confident in, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, or Auburn, to get it right with the next hire? Does that make sense?
Yes. I think Kentucky and then Mitch Barnhart, and bear with me here, I think what they have done, they understand basketball is about to lead this thing. You know what I mean? Like, it always has. It's and that's no disrespect to Kentucky football. It's just reality. I think that private, when they pretty much sold the athletic department to like that JMI company, and now they're getting like personal loans and shit to like fund the athletic department. Like, I knew what they were doing. Like, and it's a smart move in a sense because you need the funding. So, and you look at Arkansas right now, I think Hunter Yurecek's a little bit not in over his head because Hunter Yurecek's a good AD, but I think he's piping in a lot of noise and the whole Bobby Petrino nonsense. Which, I mean, it is nonsense. I mean, if you really, really think about it, this was a guy that 10 years ago embarrassed the absolute hell out of your school, just embarrassed your school. You're on the cover of front pages in London with a coach wearing a freaking neck brace at a press conference. Looks like you get the absolute hell beat out of him. And, you know, now all of a sudden it's a new age and he's your interim coach. And by the way, that was all a plan by the boosters, by the way. Like, that was all a plan. Like, Bobby was going to be the interim at some point this year. But I think, so just to get back to your question, like, Auburn is in a good spot, I think, as an athletic department. I think they have the funding. I think they have the NIL part down pat. There's a lot of schools that aren't willing right now to throw out the NIL funding until folks make a decision about what the future looks like. I think you're seeing that a little bit at Auburn. Florida, to me, to give you a wraparound the question here, Florida to me feels like a little bit of dysfunction. I know that they just won a national championship in basketball. Congratulations. But I'm just being very, very honest with folks here. 48 hours after Florida cut down the nets for the national championship, they're worried about spring football. So that's not a shot like at Todd Golden or anything like that. It's just reality in baseball and everything. Like, so overall, Auburn's in a good spot just because I don't trust what's going on with Kentucky right now. I think Hunter Yurecek needs to figure out how he's going to delegate NIL for football and basketball, because football is never going to have, you know, 20 extra million dollars a year. Like John Tyson, you know, again, I go back to the return on investment thing, you know, like he can get it out of basketball, in my opinion. So it's just, it's a really good question. And I think here's the best way to put it. I trust John Cohen right now. As crazy as that sounds, I trust John Cohen to make a decision better than Mitch Barnhart, Scott Strickland, and Hunter Yurecek. I do. And maybe I get that half-assed backwards. I don't know. I just, in talking with folks, it just feels like Arkansas is going to be left behind. If Florida's going to make a move, and then you got Auburn, Mike, and then you got Arkansas, and then you got potentially Kentucky. And so I think I would trust Auburn right now more. And I think that they, if you hooked them up to a lie detector test, they would absolutely pass it because they would say that they screwed up with the Hugh Freeze situation.
I told you, that was a difficult question. I really liked it. But hey, well, how about this? Coaching changes in the SEC that you could foresee, however that is, firing or leaving for another job. And again, let's take Pittman. He's already gone. Napier, Freeze, and Stoops. Any others that you got your eye on? Because I got my eye on two, and I just want to hear your thoughts, and then I'll tell you if you got them or not.
I got my – first off, I think we're both going to agree on this one. I got my eye on Oxford at Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin. Because his son Knox, I know they all moved to Oxford. And I'm not, good God, I'm not trying to go all John Gruden here because his wife was a cheerleader at some place. But Layla has a lot of connections to Gainesville, Florida. A lot of connections. That was her old school. There's family connections there, whatever. But like the youngest son, Knox, is at a point where he could go play high school football in Florida. And I'm not saying he's leaving. Please, people, don't take his I'm leaving, go on social media and start tagging me and shit and have Lane calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, bro, why are you putting this stuff out there? Like, I'm not trying to do that. But prepare yourself because Lane's name is about to be brought up a lot over the next. I think we both agree on that. Like, Lane's name is just one of those that's brought up in the situation. It is what it is. Like, just get used to it, Ole Miss fans. It's good to have your coach wanted. So I think that's one name that keep an eye on. The other one, Brian Kelly at LSU. I think if they go lose to Vanderbilt this weekend or whatnot, and they catch another L or two, those folks in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who I really know really well, they're not going to be happy with Brian Kelly because they'll look at it as, damn, we have wasted Jaden Daniels, Nussmeier, on the best defenses we've had in a while, and we can't run the damn football. Like, maybe Brian Kelly's not the guy. And the reason I say that too is there could be a job open that Brian Kelly's very interested in and would leave LSU for. I'm not saying LSU's firing Brian Kelly. I'm saying Brian Kelly could leave LSU and say, okay, let me go get back and go do something else. Like, nice. Would Penn State be an interesting job for Brian Kelly?
I was just going to say, just trade coaches with Penn State. That might work for everybody.
And I think Franklin would do fantastic back in the SEC. Now, right. It depends on which school. Let's just be honest with each other here. I don't think he would do good at Arkansas because they're not ready for James Franklin. Mm-hmm. Arkansas wouldn't be. Kentucky, no. No, that's not a shot at Kentucky. I'm just being realistic. But Auburn or Florida for James Franklin? Mm-hmm. He could win football games there. Jay Franklin is a good coach, okay? But, you know, the big game thing that always is tied to him, which I respect and I get it. I understand it completely. But he still had them a couple plays away from a national championship game last year. You know, he's been in these games, like these big games, like he's been in them. He had a chance. It wasn't his ass out there throwing the interception in overtime to Oregon. Like, I'm sorry, it just wasn't. Like, we have to be realistic about some of this stuff as well. Like, sure, Penn State got beat up a number of times against top-rate teams. Okay, fine. But again, like that Oregon game, like that, how's that his fault? Drew Aller threw into a two-man coverage and the linebacker just sitting there spying, waiting for the ball to come to him.
Right.
Like, so what I'm getting at is that I think Franklin would do very well. I think, you know, if North Carolina was smart, they'd fire Bill Belichick and go hire James Franklin. And have him run the program. He's done it before from an academic standpoint at a school like that. When he was at Vanderbilt, he found success. But I think Franklin's going to be a commodity because I don't see him going to like UCLA or Oklahoma State or a school like that. I think that, you know, it would be very interesting if he ended up in like Gainesville or Auburn, where I think he would find success.
Well, Trey, I love those answers of Kiffin and Kelly because I think you're 100% right.
But I'm ready for you now, though.
But you didn't even mention either one of the guys I was thinking about, which goes back to this could be a circus of a coaching carousel. I was thinking of Drake, Eli Drinkwitz, not obviously not getting fired, but perhaps maybe he's taken Missouri as far as they can go. Schedule gets significantly tougher in this 9-game SEC slate. I'm just throwing that out there. I think he's going to be a big time candidate.
I like that one. I like that one, brother. Like, I really do. Like, I drink will have his phone ringing if it's not already ringing. Not his agent's phone ringing. Because I think he is deserved. He is coached his ass off. And I think sometimes at a place, you just hit that limit. You know what I mean? And I think Drinkwitz is a really good football coach. Folks might not like him sometimes for the way he handles things and his Darth Vader and all that stuff. I love it. Like, I think it's fun. Like, I do. So that's a good, I like that one because, and I've been thinking about that one. That would be a good one. Like,
And who knows, Trey could even be the school he faces on Saturday. So he's coached there before.
He's coached before there.
And then the other one on the other end of the spectrum, everybody loves this guy too. I think he's a great guy. I think he may be the best defensive mind in the game, but I'm still not sold that he's an elite head coach, and they demand an elite head coach in Norman, Oklahoma, Trey, with Brent Venables, with the remaining schedule. Again, do I think he's getting fired? No. But if they go from 5-0 to 5-7 or 6-6, his ass got to go. I don't care. And with the schedule, at South Carolina, must win. Ole Miss at home, at Tennessee, at Alabama. They do not respect Missouri. You lose to Missouri at home. He may not even make it to LSU if he loses to Missouri.
So the next two games, I was trying to look at it. So the next three games they have, okay, so yeah. So they're going to play South Carolina, which could be an L, by the way. Ole Miss, which that's in Norman, but it doesn't matter. That's a tough one. Tennessee, I could see that being an L if they have to get in a shootout. I mean, damn, that's tough, bro. Like, yeah, I mean, if he drops 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they could easily drop 3 out of the next 6.
Right.
And if that's the case, if there's a big enough coach willing to take the Oklahoma job, which the Oklahoma job is a really good job, I could see, you know, and by the way, don't forget, Oklahoma's going to have a new athletic director. Oh, Joe Castellanos is leaving. So what does that AD want? Do they come in and have to deal with a whole year with a coach that they didn't hire? We all know how this goes. You know how this goes. I know how this goes. If you didn't hire the coach, usually they're on a short leash when you get there. So, yeah, that one's a fascinating one to me, especially if they drop a couple here down the road. And I don't even think – you tell me this question – even if John Mateer were to say, run it back for another year in Norman, I don't know if that's enough to say, okay, cool, we'll let Brent Venables come back with that. Like, I think the school would be like, oh, Mateer's going to come back maybe. Let's pay him the good amount and let's bring him an offensive freaking coach.
Right.
And they just go ham wild.
Again, I think he'll be back, right? Unless disaster strikes. But the last card he's got, he's already fired the offense coordinator. And I like the coordinator they got now. I don't know that he's fantastic. But the last card they got, and I think they really screwed up, and they're seeing it now. They brought in Ben Arbuckle. But I don't know exactly what they told him, but the fact that they kept the staff around him on the offensive side of the football, that's got to go. You got one more shot. If Mateer comes back and then you got Ben Arbuckle, hire whoever the hell you want at running back coach, tight end coach, offensive line coach, and next year's make or break for Brent Venables. I think that's best case scenario, I think, for Oklahoma.
And worst case is, you know, obviously we know what worst case is, but if they turn that loss to Texas into 3 or 4 more losses this year with John Mateer, because by the way, I don't want to hear about the injury thing to John Mateer's thumb. I don't want to hear about it. You guys cleared him. You guys put him out there on the field. If you didn't think he could go and you think he might have been, you know, he might have hampered the offense a little bit and he needed another week, that's on you. That's on the coaching staff. medical team and whatnot, not on the medical team, you can only clear him, but you know what I mean by that. Like that's on the staff for saying, okay, we're going to go with him, even though it was only 16 days ago, he was getting his thumb cut open and some freaking screws put in his throwing hand, you know? And so, and that was the storyline, by the way, the whole storyline. What about Arch? What about anything else? It was about the thumb and the doctor. And then they come out and they get their ass beat by Texas. And all of a sudden, Texas season flips, and Oklahoma's is like, uh-oh. Like, we were thinking CFP. We were thinking John Mateer in New York for the Heisman. Now we're just praying to God that we somehow get through this gauntlet. Like, things just changed on a dime.
Right. I think what that exposed, Trey, was the offense is Mateer. And if he's not performing at an elite level, we got nothing. And that is you cannot have it at a place like Oklahoma. They have their offensive line's an issue. They have no running backs. Where are the hell the receivers? They have no tight ends. This is a major, major issue.
Well, you had him out there running in circles, and you know he's got a banged up freaking hand, and he's out here taking hits, and you got ESPN on the broadcast saying John Mateer's hand is bloody on the sideline, and it's all over his jersey and whatnot. It's like, what do you expect, man? This was the whole storyline. You put him out there. So I just, you know, I feel for Oklahoma fans because that was a shot to the gut last weekend when you see the offense, you know, 6 points, three interceptions from Mateer. And, you know, for the previous 15 days, you know, you're about to build a statue for Dr. Stephen Shin from Cedar Sinai in L.A. And now you're wondering if, you know, y'all can make the playoffs. Life comes at you quick, man.
Hey, last thing for you, Trey. Really appreciate your time. Man, epic, epic, epic weekend. I don't know if you've heard this, Trey. This is the first time ever in conference history. We got eight conference games. This has literally never been done, and it's not happening again this season. So this is a special, special weekend in the Southeastern Conference. Which game do you think is the best game? I know you're going down to Tuscaloosa, but I'm just wondering which game, you know, by Saturday night, we're like, my God, what a game that was.
Okay. All right, keep this thing up for a second because I'm making my decision real quick. I think Vanderbilt beats LSU. I could easily say Georgia or Ole Miss or Tennessee, Alabama. Right. I could easily say that, but I'm gonna go. I was about to pick one over the other. I'm gonna say Jeff Lebby. Ooh. Goes down to Gainesville, and they put up one hell of a fight against Florida. I don't trust that line. I think Jeff Lebby and them could have a couple of tricks up their sleeve for Florida. I mean, doesn't that game feel like Northwestern going to Penn State?
Yes, it does.
You know what I mean? Like, they hang around, and they hang around, and they hang around, and then they put a drive together, you know, towards the end of the fourth quarter, and take the lead, and Florida can't score, and Billy's out here looking around the stadium, you know, like he knows, just like James knew it was done, like he knows. I'm not trying to make light of it, but it would just be really, to bring it full circle, it would be pretty crazy if the school Scott Strickland was the AD at Mississippi State comes down to Gainesville and forces Scott Strickland to make a decision he doesn't particularly want to make, but he knows he's got to make. Like, karma is a biatch in this world, and nothing would be crazier than something like that happens. But to really give you a good answer, I think Oklahoma and South Carolina is going to be a fantastic, fun football game. I think Beamer knows he needs to get this one. Oklahoma knows they need to get this one. Like, so if there was an outlier out of those other two games, I think it's Oklahoma, South Carolina is the one I'm keeping an eye on, because like you just brought up, if South Carolina beats Oklahoma and the Sooners have dropped two in a row, oh boy. Like, the temperature rises in Norman. It's already hot as hell out there in October. It gets even worse.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of that question, Trey, there's no wrong answer except for Texas, Kentucky. So, hey, really appreciate you. Before you go, tell my audience how to follow you and how to find your work.
Yeah, follow me on X, Twitter. It's Twitter, at Trey Wallace _. Follow me on IG. Never thought I'd be promoting Instagram, at Trey Wallace _ as well. I was about to forget that. And then, yeah, all my work at Outkick.com. We'll have you covered throughout the weekend. I'm in Tuscaloosa. Got a 6:30 kickoff down here. So fun scene setter pieces that we always do on Friday. We'll have some fun Saturday before the game, as we did a couple weeks ago. And, yeah, man, I'm looking. This is going to be a great weekend of football. Really looking forward to it, because the only other decent game outside of the SEC is Notre Dame and USC. So that's it. So just the SEC comes up again, and CBS executives are sitting around, you know, just hitting themselves in punishment because they let that deal go. So that's on me.
All right. Well, hey, buddy, thank you so much for stopping by. Safe travels. Enjoy the weekend, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Keep killing it, brother. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, I'll come.